Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier BOGO offer. Buy one, get one free for 1 week only. Order today at EdenPureDeals.com with code GRACEBOGO.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We've got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I am so excited for our next guest. John Hinderocker from Powerline Blog is with us. We haven't had him on the show in quite some too long. It's been too long. And John, we thank you for your time. I wanted to start today with this Stormy Daniels news. She is testifying in this case against Trump, the hush money case that has, I must be getting eyeballs because it's all over the news. And what I wanted to start with is you describe this trial in New York City against Trump as a farce. There's very little new information coming out in regards to the supposed crime here. I doubt Stormy Daniels taking the stand today is going to change that. So I wanted to hear your reaction to the news that the porn star is on the stand and what you make of it, and really just overall what you've seen so far of this case.
Well, Grace, this is consistent with the fact that this prosecution is not just a farce. It's an outrage. It is an absolute outrage. And by focusing attention on Stormy Daniels, there's no really no real fact question in the case, you know, that turns on her relationship with Donald Trump. It's just, you know, part of the effort to smear Trump. What a lot of people don't understand, Grace, is that it was perfectly legal for Donald Trump to pay Stormy Daniels for a non-disclosure agreement. Legally, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. So that is not the crime that he's charged with, although you might not understand that from the news accounts. The crime he's charged with is filing corporate documents with New York State where he paid his lawyer, Michael Cohen, about $130,000, I think, to reimburse Cohen because Cohen wrote the checks to Stormy Daniels. So Alvin Bragg says, well, that's filing a false corporate document because it referred to the payment to Cohen as being for legal services or legal fees. Well, I'm not sure that's false, number one. We don't know whether Trump even knew what the bill, you know, or what the invoice said. But more importantly, that alleged crime, the filing of a false corporate document, is a misdemeanor, and the statute of limitations ran out on that misdemeanor long ago. This goes back to 2016. And so the great mystery is, what is the crime with which Donald Trump is being charged? Because Bragg is trying to resurrect that misdemeanor, because if it was done, if the false corporate filing was done to cover up another crime, well, then it's a felony on which the statute hasn't run. But what is the other crime? It is almost unbelievable, but Alvin Bragg's indictment doesn't say what the other crime was. And there is no other crime. I mean, this prosecution is an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, and when you bring up the fact that what they're actually putting witnesses on the stand to talk about has really nothing to do with what they're alleging is a crime, which, you know, as you just pointed out, they're not even really alleging anything's a crime, it makes it so much more obvious, as you said, that they're just trying to smear Trump. And I saw that Jonathan Turley, the law professor, said something similar, where he said this is all just a ploy to embarrass Donald Trump. But John, the part of this that confuses me, and maybe I'm alone in this feeling, maybe the voters out there feel differently, I think he's almost like past the point of embarrassment. And I don't mean that as a dig at the former president. I just mean there's a Teflon quality to this guy. We've heard everything at this point. We're kind of desensitized to it. So I don't really know if it's having that same smear factor of dirty laundry, having Stormy Daniels up on the stand making sex jokes. I kind of think most people are numb to it at this point.
Grace, I think he would have to have been living in a cave for the last 8 or 10 years if you didn't know that Donald Trump allegedly had some kind of a one-night fling with Stormy Daniels. I don't think anybody cares. I think you're right. But here's the problem. The problem is this case is getting tried to a Manhattan jury, which, as Trump keeps saying, undoubtedly is overwhelmingly Democratic. And the jury doesn't understand the legal issues. All they know is they're seeing all this testimony.
Right.
And they don't really know what it is that Trump is being charged with, but it sounds like the DA, or it seems like the DA, is putting on a successful case. I think there's a high probability that at the end of the day, they're going to find Trump guilty, although we're still not sure guilty of what. And there is poll data that suggests that there's a fair number of people who would be influenced in their vote if Trump is a convicted felon. And that's the real goal here. The Democrats want to be able to say 10,000 times every day that Donald Trump is a convicted felon.
Yeah, and really what he's guilty of, and we all know this, and he's been guilty of it since 2016, is beating Hillary Clinton. That was the great crime that Donald Trump committed. John, I want to move on because I have so many other topics to get to with you. I wanted to go to the Middle East now. Israel's highly anticipated and highly criticized attack on Rafah has begun. Yesterday, news broke that Hamas, unbeknownst to Israel, which you'd think would be kind of an important player in this game of negotiations and ceasefires, they suddenly accepted a ceasefire. And I read your piece on this. Everyone should go to Paraline blog because they cover so much and they do it in kind of like bites. I always say that, but it's bite-sized articles. You can really take a lot in. You call this a typical ploy by Hamas. I agree with you, but I would love if you could explain to the audience what their thinking is and why they wanted to bring forth this sudden ceasefire and why it's working, why this ploy is working to a considerable degree, especially here in the United States.
Sure. So Israel's mission is to destroy Hamas once and for all. After October 7th, they have to put Hamas out of business, and they understand that. They can't destroy Hamas without going into Rafah, which is where the last, 10,000, 15,000, whatever it is, of Hamas fighters are hiding. That's where they have gone. So they've got to go into Hamas. So there have been these kind of fake negotiations going on for the last, several months now over a ceasefire. Well, if Hamas wants a ceasefire, they can do what countries that are losing a war and want the fighting to stop normally do, that is surrender. Okay, all they have to do is surrender, put down their weapons, come out with their hands up, and yeah, then they'll get a ceasefire. But that's not what they want. They want Israel to cease fire, and they're going to keep fighting. That is what they're trying to achieve. And so there have been these kind of fake negotiations going on in the Middle East, and Hamas hems and haws, and they put in conditions that Israel can't possibly accept. And then at the last possible moment, when Israel has now issued directions to the civilians in Rafah to move out, and here's where you can go to a safe space, all of a sudden Hamas says, We accept. We'll have a ceasefire, And of course, around the world, people are scratching their heads and saying, "Well, accept what? What are exactly the terms?" And the answer is, it's all nonsense. They're not accepting anything. They're going to fight, and they're going to keep fighting. But for whatever reason, the international press is on the side of Hamas.
Yep.
And the Biden administration is on the side of Hamas. And they're constantly leaning on Israel not to win the war. Israel didn't start this war. Gaza started the war last October 7th with the most despicable, vicious assault, perhaps in the history of warfare. I mean, it was that bad. They started this war, and Israel has no choice but to fight the war and win the war. And, Grace, why it is that the Biden administration doesn't want Israel to fight and win this war, well, that's a big topic.
Yeah, I love this line in your piece. You said, for reasons I can't explain, international pressure is entirely on Israel. It really is. And we've seen it from the media. We've seen it from this White House and from the UN and from leaders around the world. And that actually brings me, you were just talking about why that is and kind of getting to the root of this. Not to sound like Kamala Harris, we're going to get to the root of this problem with John Hinderaker right now. But another problem, as I see it, is some of these organizations that are funding this activism and funding this anti-Semitism, especially here in the United States. Obviously, there are universities abroad that are also, their students are partaking in this. But I want to focus on the U.S. because, unlike Politico, John, my audience was not surprised to find out that some of the usual suspects are involved in this far-left radicalization and the fundraising that goes to it. I would love for you to fill us in a little bit on the Tides Foundation in particular and how far up the food chain this really goes.
Yeah, so the first point I think we need to make, Grace, is that this is not really about Israel, okay? Israel is the little Satan. But as we've seen in these protests in the college campuses, it's America they hate. It's America's flag that they tear down and replace with the Palestinian flag. This is fundamentally an anti-American movement. We are the great Satan. So who's paying for it? Who's organizing it? Who's behind these hundreds of campus protests? And the answer is the establishment left. We're talking about the Tides Foundation, which is the baby of George Soros. That's George Soros's main vehicle. But he's not the only donor to the Tides Foundation. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is also funding Tides. Another one who is helping to fund these protests is David Rockefeller Jr. You know, long gone are the days when the Rockefellers were Republicans. You know, now we've got a far left Democrat actually funding anti-American protests. And you've got the Pritzkers. They're also funders of the Tides Foundation. And by the way, it's JB or JD, I forget, Pritzker, who is the governor of Illinois. This is the Hyatt Hotel fortune. He's the governor of Illinois. He spent more money in the 2022 election cycle in my state of Minnesota than anyone else. He spent $4.3 million, I believe was the number. The governor of Illinois, nobody who lives in Minnesota spent that much on Minnesota politics. And the Pritzker family, one of the big donors to the Tides Foundation and the Adela Justice Project and others who are funding and who are behind these anti-American protests. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and just so people know, you should check this out at Paraline. John writes, why are so many of America's richest people viciously anti-Semitic and anti-American? That is probably one for the psychiatrist's couch. I would agree. I don't think we have time to unpack it here, John, but I appreciate you trying. I always love having you on. I'm sorry it's been so long. Keep up the great work, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you soon. Tell people where they can find all of your work and where they can follow you.
PowerlineBlog.com. We have fresh content every day. Don't miss it.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. We'll talk to you soon. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. And I want to talk about the anti-American sentiment, because John is right. Israel's just the little Satan. We're the top dog. We're the big guy in this case. And at one school, and you've been seeing kind of this counter-protest, this frat guy pro-America movement happening. I'm very supportive of this. I think it's wonderful. I know it's toxic masculinity rearing its ugly head, but it brings me a little bit of hope, and I think we all need hope. Well, last night, I think it was last night at Harvard, there's a story that might bring you some hope, and we'll talk about that when we come back. 844-500-4242. Plus, I want to go into this Portland story a little bit more. I keep teasing a little bit of it, but 17 cop cars set on fire in Portland. That feels like if the people setting the cop cars on fire, or setting any car on fire, even trucks, even, you know, evil trucks, if those people had MAGA hats on, I think this would be a much bigger story. But I think they were just wearing gas masks and looking for zip ties. So they're getting a free pass on this. We'll talk about it when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit PerfectSmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is which trial has a less reliable group of prosecution witnesses, the Trump hush money trial or the Karen Reed trial?
I'm going to say the Karen Reed trial. I mean, the first week they brought out the paramedics, and I mistakenly thought this is going to be kind of a slow week because the paramedics, they're going to just give you the rundown of what these paramedics. One of the paramedics has ties to the owner of the house's daughter, an Albert, has pictures with her at all sorts of different parties, says they're just acquaintances, but they don't seem like acquaintances. And so right there, you're already thinking to yourself, well, if the first responders are involved with this incestuous group of people in Canton, then it's only going to get crazier from here. I don't know how you establish credible witnesses if everybody has a tie to the people that own the house in one way or another. So I'm going with Karen Reed on this one.
Needles moved slightly. Karen Reed is now at 27%. Donald Trump hush money trial, well in the lead at 73%.
You know what I want to ask you, Jared, and I just brought this up with John Hinderacher. By the way, if you ever miss an interview and you hop in here, I know people are driving around different times from work and stuff like that on your lunch breaks. If you ever miss an interview, go back, find the podcast, because some of these guests, they do a great job of breaking these things down in a way where, if I'm being honest, I can't always do. John Hinderacher is one of those guests. He gets it. And so he's talking about this trial. First, he described it as a farce in his piece, and then he came on our show and he said it's worse than that. Like a farce, you know, there's a level of a joke implied there. It's amusing in some way. This is just despicable what they're doing to the former president. But my question for you, Jared, is we were talking about the smearing of Trump and how you see Stormy Daniels. Well, you don't see her because it's not taped, but you hear Stormy Daniels is up on the stand. She's writing another book, another two books. So her book total is going to come to three books in her repertoire. And she's talking about making jokes and talking about spanking Trump with a magazine and all these kind of dirty details of their affair from 2006, by the way. And Jonathan Turley and John Hinderacher had the same thought, which is this isn't relevant to the actual crime. This is all just detail to dust up Trump and make him look bad and embarrass him. And that was the word that stuck out to me from Turley, is this is all an attempt to embarrass Trump. I don't think it's possible to embarrass this guy anymore. And I guess if that sounds like I'm making fun of him, I guess I kind of am in a way. It's like the guy has so much dirty laundry. There's what else can he be embarrassed about? But there's something, there's a gift in that. There's a superpower in saying, you guys have canceled me for absolutely everything. Everything's out there. This is who I am. Faults and all. I don't know. It's a little bit like he's Teflon now.
Yeah, I don't want to say there's no such thing as shame anymore, but there really is no longer shame at all anywhere. And honestly, this was the start of the Stormy Daniels thing from the beginning. I remember the first time around, the details they put out like that. Trump had an affair, but they didn't use a condom. Like, just to try and make it seem like he was more dirty for some reason, or like dust him up, like you said, or like John said, like all the stupid, salacious details are to put out there. But again, this is Tucker touched on this a little bit way back in the 2016 campaign when they were talking about, you know, how do religious groups like Donald Trump? And he's like, look, they're not looking for moral support. They're looking for a bodyguard.
I'm not looking to marry
nobody,
the guy.
Nobody who supports Donald Trump is under any type of illusion that he's a saint. It doesn't matter to any of us. And embarrassing him like this, it's a lot of people. Listen, if you hate Trump, you're just going to always hate Trump. If you're somebody who wants, you know, cheap groceries and cheap gas, you don't care if dude had a consensual relationship with a porn star 20 years ago.
Yeah, embarrassing Trump is a heavier lift than embarrassing most people. You got to really pull something out of the hat for that to happen. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Thank you to all my listeners. A lot of people text in it too, and they say the show's going by too fast. It's just going by too quickly. And I always agree with you. We have a lot of fun here. We have great guests, I like to think. And, of course, we have amazing callers, and we're going to go to them right now. Nick, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Nick?
How you doing, Grace? Two quickies, one in each of the two trials, the Reid trial and the Trump trial. In the Trump trial, somebody in the defense team needs to ask Stormy Daniels at some particular point, why the hell did you decide to nullify, and why did you sue to nullify the NDA agreement that you made? Was it political? Was it monetary? You said she's has several books. That is, if you wanted to disparage her character, that's something right there. But also, too, how about putting a dent in where the hell was all this pushing coming from for her to do this? Was it people in the Democratic Party, et cetera? On the Reid case, someone needs to explain, and according to phone records, how the hell the cop's phone, right, the deceased cop's phone, why did it show GPS movement inside the home, going to different vertical levels, by the way? And how the hell did it end up outside? If that phone can be testified to by the telephone experts, then they've got a big problem because somebody in the house killed them. And that's it. So I got to say thank you.
Yeah, I don't know enough about his phone, Nick, but I'm writing that down because I'll ask Turtle Boy. I'm going to try to get him on tomorrow. It seems like it makes sense to break it up between a few days just so we have more questions ready for him. Although, you know, to be honest, we could do it every day. I just know he's busy. But the other part of it, too, on the Karen Reid front is I saw something that Turtle Boy put out about, I don't know if it was Jennifer McCabe or somebody had a watch on, Jared, where you can detect, you know, those Apple watches, you can see people's heart rate and heart monitor. And that's a new thing, too. We talk a lot about how social media, text messages, Googling, you know, how long does it take to die in the snow? All this stuff is modern ways of making a case against someone that I think a lot of people don't consider in the cover up of a crime is the fact that forensically they can go in and find so much stuff in your browser search history or, you know, with the technology that you use. But I never even considered the Apple Watch. But I do think there have been cases, Jared, where they've looked at people's Apple Watch information and they've been able to use that to make or break a case. I'm not sure about John O'Keefe's cell phone. I will look into that, Nick. I don't want to speak on it without knowing more information. I will ask Turtle Boy when I have him on next, which hopefully will be tomorrow. And your first point about Stormy Daniels, yeah, I think she was getting a lot of pressure from Michael Avenatti. We know that she was under his wing for a while, under his tutelage, and that obviously didn't go well for her. It didn't go well for him either. He's in prison now. But the other part of it, and I know I sound, Jared, like just Mickey the Dunce over here, and please forgive me. I didn't go to law school, okay? Unlike Joe Biden, I didn't graduate number one in my law class. I didn't even graduate last. But if you sign a non-disclosure agreement, is there some part in that agreement that talks about not disclosing information? And if you sign on to that and then you break said non-disclosure agreement, isn't that a problem for you as the person who agreed to the non-disclosure? Is this just me oversimplifying it and I'm just a big old idiot? And I should understand why Stormy Daniels is in the right here. Because I would be thinking if she had a consensual sex with Donald Trump and then they covered it up with hush money or they paid her to be quiet about it. And she took the money to be quiet about it. And now she's airing it out, not once, not twice, thrice. Writing books about it, doing interviews, podcasts, making more money off of it. Doesn't she have to at least pay back the hush money?
I mean, you think at that point, that's a breach of contract.
It's almost like these non-disclosure agreements don't even mean anything anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's like NFL contracts. Sure, $1 billion, whatever.
You know what we have to get to right now? I've got this waiting here, and I've been sitting on this for way too long. We have to talk about the custodian at Columbia. Yesterday, we had on Caroline Downey from the National Review, and she was fabulous. I really, really loved having her on. And she was talking to us about, similar to what John Hinderacher was discussing today, about the funding and who's paying for all of these protests. It's an important question. Follow the money. A lot of these young people on the hunger strikes and sitting on the sprinklers with the buckets, I don't get the sense that they'd be out there if they didn't have their snacks and their zip ties and their lotion and their dental dams. I get the sense that they might wrap things up early if they weren't getting this pampered treatment from these outside agitators. And there's a lot of funding. And so Caroline Downey came on and she was talking about the Tides Foundation. She was talking about Bill and Melinda Gates, the Pritzkers, a lot of the same people Hinderacher mentioned. And one thing she said, Jared, about these students was, you can't be the kids and the adults. Like, they want to be the adults when it comes to protesting. Ah, you know, we're out here. We're out here speaking the truth, speaking truth to power. You can't shut us down. We're taking a stand. We're going to change the history of what's going on in the Middle East by putting graffiti all over these monuments and putting sticky stuff all over the floor and dismantling the fire alarms. Okay, sure, Jan. If that's what you think it's going to take to fix what's going on in the Middle East, go for it. But then at the same time, they like to cry victim and say, you didn't let us get our pizza. You didn't let the pizza man come through, and we're hungry. We're going to dehydrate in here. And so Caroline's point was, you can't be the kid and the adult at the same time. You got to pick a lane. And I thought to myself, yeah, you can't be the hostage taker and also be a victim at the same time. And this is a part of the story I think people forget. The peaceful anti-war activists, it's not really anti-war. Anti-war right now is a euphemism for anti-Semitic. But the peaceful activists took three janitors hostage. Like, they did not come
peacefully
to play. Okay, yeah, peace. They peacefully, I mean, haven't we all at one point peacefully taken a janitor, a custodian, hostage to get our way? It's not the first time it's ever happened, Jared, and I'm sure it won't be the last time. Hey, you know, in the office just the other day, Jared said, hey, I want to order from here. I said, no, I want to order from here. I said to Jared, you are now held hostage in this office until I get my way. These things happen. But in the case of Columbia, it is worth noting the Columbia custodian is speaking out. And I want to read you a little bit of this, okay, before we play the sound. This is from the FP, which I believe the Free Press is Barry Weiss's publication, her online site, which does very well. It's the viral image that captured the clash between the anti-Israel protesters who stormed Columbia and the campus workers who tried to stop them. As the mob invaded Hamilton Hall in the early hours of April 30th, a facilities worker was photographed pushing a demonstrator against a wall. It's a great, great picture. Later, it emerged that the protester was a 40-year-old trust fund kid named James Carlson, who owns a townhouse in Brooklyn worth $2.3 million. So he knows he's down with the struggle. He gets it. The man who tried to hold him back was Mario Torres, 45, who has worked at Columbia for 5 years. The average janitor makes less than $19 an hour. He's worked there for 5 years. Now, in an exclusive interview with the Free Press, Mario Torres describes the experience of being on duty as protesters stormed the building in the early hours of the morning, breaking glass and barricading the entrances. So let's play a little bit of this. This is Mario Torres. He's the custodian who has to deal with these rich kid activists, these indoctrinated, spoiled, coddled, arrogant, narcissistic little beasts. And he's the custodian, and this is what he had to say about it. Let's start with Cut 10.
I was on the third floor. Initially, I thought it was about five or six students, and I was just trying to kick them out, you know, and I saw them grabbing furniture, and I'm like, you know, you, what are you doing? You know, no, you know, I don't think I can curse here, but I was upset because, you know, they were doing things they weren't supposed to. But when I look back, they just multiplied. And I can see my coworker Lester on the other side of the third floor, you know, trying to kick people out. But we didn't think we thought that it was maybe 15 or 20 people. It wasn't like that, you know, and you can't possibly fight off, you know, 100 people.
I'm sure that there's some strategy here for the greater good that Mario and myself, that we're not able to understand. Like, there's got to be some prong to this strategy that is, we must take the custodians hostage in order to ensure peace in the Middle East. But they don't really want peace in the Middle East. They just want Israel to not defend itself. So let me rephrase that. We must take the janitors hostage in order to support Hamas. Is that a fair way to describe it? I think it is. We have to take the custodians who are trying to do their jobs for $90 an hour hostage so that those of us who live in $2.3 million townhouses in Brooklyn can feel like we're making a difference in Israel's attempt to defeat Hamas. Hamas needs our support. Let's play cut 12. This is also Mario Torres.
I'm hearing things, you know, this is bigger than you. A bunch of, you know, stuff. But when I turn around and I see all these people, and I try to make my way over to Lester's side. You know, he's a bigger dude than I am. But once I got there, I don't know which direction he went in. And then that's when I had the altercation with one of those guys, you know.
How did that start?
Well, shoving. Kicking, shoving, you know, a lot of shoving. Yeah, you know, picture, you know, when you leave Yankee Stadium and everyone's trying to exit, right? There's a lot of people around. There's a lot of, you know, moving parts. And I just kept on trying to yell, like, you know, well, if A, get out. I was trying to protect the building. But now let me out and then don't touch me. Like, I was trying to say all those things, you know, at once.
Yeah, I also just want to play, you know, we'll save some of these for the other side. Let's go to Paul. You're next up on the Grace Curley Show. What's going on, Paul?
Hi, Grace. It's so unfair, this judgment shown in this gag order. I can't believe they're not even going to allow Trump to testify. Is that even constitutional?
Oh, you're talking about Juan Merchan and the gag order? No, the gag order is just so they think that in this gag order, they think that Trump is disparaging the judge and the jury and that he is speaking out of turn, so to speak. And he feels as though it's his First Amendment right that he should be able to say what he wants. He's pointing out a conflict of interest between Juan Merchan, the judge, and his daughter, who actually has worked for a company, a strategist who help Democrats fundraise. And some of the things these Democrats fundraise off of is Trump's legal cases. So Trump's point is, hey, if your daughter makes money at a job helping people fundraise off my legal cases, maybe you shouldn't be presiding over said legal case. By pointing out that conflict of interest, which I can actually see it pretty clearly, I think most people can, Trump is being told that he's putting people in danger, he is smearing people, he would know something about being smeared. It's kind of been the media's goal for the last 10 years of smearing Trump, but he's not allowed to do it. He's allowed to be smeared, he's just not allowed to smear other people as the judge sees it. So he's got a gag order on him. He's already raked in, I think, like 10 different fines. Now the judge is saying he might throw him in jail. I don't think that's going to happen because I think even this judge knows that if you throw this guy in jail for this, the momentum that he currently has, and a recent Rasmussen poll showed him up 10 points. Trump's up 10 points against Joe Biden. I think this judge, along with the entire Democrat Party, knows this thing is backfiring in a way that they did not intend. And to put him in prison at this point would be the nail in the coffin for Joe Biden's presidency and candidacy as far as 2024 goes. There was one other thing on that same front that I wanted to say about Donald Trump campaigning and this Judge Juan Merchan. I'll save it for when I come back. 844-500-4242. I have a feeling Paul was going to go into, he dropped off there, but he was going to into, yeah, it's amazing, Jared. How
that might have been Paul and or Michael and or Henry and or Andrew and or.
Yeah, they do this weird thing where it's like this fake sarcasm. Or it's just sarcasm. It's so crazy how, and I already know where it's going. And the weird part is if they just called up these Democrats and they just told me what their issue was, we could have a conversation. But this whole like gotcha thing of they're going to, oh, don't you think? It's a waste of time. Just call up and be honest, Paul. I know Paul was that guy too. I can just hear it in his voice.
Yeah.
There's smarminess that you can hear from a mile away. That's my superpower.
Like a setup routine.
Just give your real name, by the way. That's the other part. Just give your real name. Let's be authentic with each other. That was the name of Juan Merchan's daughter's company. It's like Authentic Campaigns or something like that. Allergy season is here and you need the Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier. Warmer temps are creeping up and you're going to want to open those doors and windows. Pollen is going to come in, and when it does, you are going to need the thunderstorm, and you're going to be happy that you got the BOGO offer. That's buy one, get one. You will not regret buying one of these thunderstorms and getting one for free. When you get the BOGO special, you're going to think to yourself, I would have paid for the second one. That's how great this product is. It gets rid of the allergens. It gets rid of the pollutants. And Jared, it just really works.
Yeah, it was great for my allergy headaches. And you know, you get a lot of headaches this time of year with all the pollen. Even looking out the window now, just in the past 3 days, how much more the trees have leaves on them and how much more white and yellow and green or whatever stuff is on the ground. It's gross. But the thunderstorm saves you from the headaches. It saves you from the coughing, the sneezing, all that stuff you don't want to deal with, because it ionizes the air, which is what creates a super oxygen, and that's what eliminates those allergens and pollutants in the air. And the BOGO is great because you can have one for your house if you want to have the windows open. You can have one in your car where your allergies get really bad if you open the windows. Pollen gets in very easily in the cars, and it works just as well in the car as it does in your home.
So take advantage of the BOGO deal right now by going to EdenPureDeals.com and using code GRACEBOGO. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Don't forget to use code GRACEBOGO. Hurry, these BOGO deals don't last long. Speaking of moon baths, when we come back, an ex-CNN reporter tweeted about a haunting dinner she had. What was so haunting about this dinner? There were people there who didn't agree with her far-left talking points, and she has not been the same since. We'll talk about it on the other side.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Twitter thread, a woman who used to work at CNN, she went on this long rant about a dinner party she went to. So her name is Michelle Kaczynski. She's 50, and she took to social media on Sunday to describe a recent dinner. I'm going to read you a few of these. You don't need the whole thing. You can pretty much get a taste of what she's getting at pretty quickly. A few weeks ago, I had dinner. Actually, you know what, Jared? Can I get a little dun-dun-dun ready? Because this is pretty stunning stuff. I had dinner with a few couples, friends of friends, all American. All were well-educated. That sounds a little, right there, it sounds a little xenophobic. All American. All were well-educated and successful in careers. They seemed great on the surface. No, you know what we need? We need a little Jaws music. They seemed great on the surface for like an hour. But slowly, over a few drinks, they began to let slip their true MAGA natures. I don't like the way this is written, but that's just me being a little nitpicky. One of the couples each attended top Ivy League colleges. But now that it was university time for their own kids, they were adamantly not letting them apply to Ivies and were weird about explaining why, though the kids were double legacies. Okay, moving on. The next crew suddenly busted out with air quotes when mentioning climate change. Again, these are otherwise smart people. Not scientists, clearly, but educated. And the dude took seething umbrage when my friend mentioned the damage Trump had done and vowed to continue to do. This dinner, later she says, continues to haunt me. They all seem so normal. When I asked the couple who were my old friends how they didn't know, they said that in their upscale Florida neighborhood, people are extremely careful not to ever broach or debate the subject. This is not healthy. If people don't ever talk about these things and only live in their own warped information silos, she would know something about that, how will they ever learn what is true or false? This dinner continues to haunt me. Someone said, damn, to be haunted by conversations with those you disagree. You have my sympathy. We'll be right back.